Good afternoon, everyone. So welcome all for the final session and the final talk of this Usenix security. I'm Payas Gupta. This work was done by me and my supervisor, Devin Gao. I'm from Singapore Management University. So today I'm talking about, I'll be talking about fighting coercion attacks in key generation using skin conductance. So this whole paper is all about this picture. So basically, we all know that cryptographic keys are very long. So they are so long that we lazy humans come out with some easy measures like password, USB keys, and biometric key generation. So in biometric key generation, the sensor scans the biometric, and it extracts some features from the biometric, and these features are translated into the cryptographic keys, and you can use these cryptographic keys to encrypt or to decrypt the file, and you can also use these cryptographic keys to log in into the system. But okay, all these mechanisms have more or less these three properties: unforgettability, unforgeability, and high entropy. But one thing is important and one thing is common, which is all these systems are vulnerable to coercion attack. So what do I mean by coercion attack is, if you remember in the RUM session, there was a talk regarding forcing the users to retrieve the passwords. So coercion attack is the same thing where you force or you put a gun on someone's head to retrieve the password or retrieve whatever you want. So that's basically coercion attack. So in this talk, I'll talk about the biometric key generation and how to fight against coercion attack using biometric key generation. So there are some examples of this coercion attack where the property or coercion resistance property can be used to fight against these attacks. So if we have the coercion resistance property, which I'll explain in next few slides, in the, let's suppose, bank's vault, so we believe that no one will force the manager, bank manager, to open the vault. Or if we have this coercion resistance property in cockpit doors of the airliners, let's suppose, then no one will force, so attackers or terrorists will not force the crew members to open the cockpit door of the airplane. So we can, we may fight against 9/11 kind of attacks. So this is the outline of my talk today. So I'll today talk about the coercion attack on biometric key generation. Then I'll talk about the proposed approach to deal with coercion attack. Then I'll show some interesting user study details in which we really coerce the user, and we'll see what are the results. And finally, I'll conclude and talk about some limitations and discussions on the approach we used. So, okay, let's talk about something, the existing approach to generate biometric keys from voice. So the user utters his password in a correct manner. So this password is translated to cryptographic keys using algorithm. And if the cryptographic key is correct, you can authenticate or you can log in into the system. Or maybe you can decrypt the file. But the problem with this is the coercion attack. If someone forces you to do something, or if someone put a gun on your head to utter your password, then you have to do it, and he can even force you to control that voice in a correct manner. And if the voice or the password is in a correct manner, then the correct cryptographic key will be generated, and you are still authenticated. So that's the basic problem with the coercion attack. So in this paper, so I'll talk about the So we have used voice as an example here, but this can be used for, this is applicable to fingerprints, hand, eyes, et cetera, face, even the most common password-based mechanism. So I've talked about what is coercion resistance property, which we need actually in the systems to fight against coercion attack. So basically, what is coercion resistance? So there's a paper which talks about, okay, how to fight against coercion attack using panic password. Let's suppose if your password is 1234, and when you enter this password into the, or PIN number into the ATM, to the ATM machine, then you can retrieve the money. But in panic password, you may enter, let's suppose, 4321, and it gives a signal to the bank, and maybe you can block the system, or the attacker doesn't get any money. So that's panic password. But the problem in this panic password scheme, or in general, the schemes, because the user had to make a choice. User can either enter 1234 or 4321. So that's basically what we don't want. Because if user had a choice, then attacker can force the user, and because attacker knows that user had a choice. So what exactly we need is a coercion-resistant scheme where user does not have a choice. User does not have the capability to actually generate the correct cryptographic key, or user doesn't have the capability to actually enter the password. So no matter what the user does, system should not allow him or her to authenticate under coercion. So the basic assumption is that attacker knows the system in that case. And the implication is that if attacker knows how the system works, if attacker knows that if I force the user, and if the user is under coercion attack, so he will lose his capability to log in or generate the correct cryptographic key. So the implication is, if under the assumption that attacker knows the system, an implication is that the attacker will never force or will not force the user. So let's see how to fight against this coercion attack. So our solution is, along with voice. So voice is an example here, and you can use voice, fingerprints, etc. Along with voice, use skin conductance. So skin conductance is basically when you are stressed. So the sweat comes on your hand, so it's basically due to skin conductance. That's the electrical conductance between the two points of your finger body, actually. So you use skin conductance as an emotional response parameter to generate cryptographic keys. So what we did is that we use voice and skin conductance. So this is a skin conductance device which we use for our experiments. And so when you are in normal state, your skin conductance will be on the base level, and it will be normal, and you can generate the correct cryptographic key, and you are authenticated to a system. But when you are in stress or under coercion attack or in duress situation or condition, then you lose your capability and your skin conductance goes high, and the cryptographic key generated is incorrect and you are not authenticated to the system. So that's the basic solution, and that's the overview of our approach. But why skin conductance? Well, it's cheap and it is a very small device, so it can be simultaneously measured with fingerprints. Skin conducting responses are quick and easy to measure. Plus, it has been known that it is the fastest responding measure of stress response. Even heart rate is not the fastest. So let's see how to generate cryptographic key only from voice. This is an existing approach. So we use this approach and we seamlessly integrated our approach in this current approach. So you have a voice sample. So you extract some features. I'm not going into the details of this approach. So you extract some features, and you generate a feature descriptor. So what the basic intuition behind feature descriptor is that the feature descriptor should be same when you speak out the same password, and feature descriptor should be different when you speak out the wrong password or if someone else has speaked out on your behalf. So that's the basic intuition to generate feature descriptor. So from this feature descriptor, you generate lookup table. So your lookup table looks like this, where you have some garbage value and you have key components. So you can traverse through this whole lookup table, and you can generate the cryptographic key. So now at the time of reconstruction of the cryptographic keys, you have a new sample, you extract some features, you again generate the feature descriptor, and from the feature descriptor, you generate feature bit vector. From this feature bit vector, so let's suppose the feature bit vector is in form of zeros and ones. So you go through this lookup table using feature bit vector like 0, 1, 1, 1, 1, and you can recover the key. You can collect all these key components and you can recover the key. So that's the overview of cryptographic key generation from voice. So this is the enrollment. Basically, we have to train the system. So this is the enrollment phase of the cryptographic key generation. And this is the key reconstruction part of the scheme. Now, let's see how to generate cryptographic keys from voice and skin conductance. So if you remember, this is the cryptographic key generation from voice. So we integrated our approach, or skin conductance approach, with the same kind of mechanism into the key generation from voice. So you have skin conductance, you take a sample from the skin conductance, and you extract some features from the skin conductance. Not going into the details of the features, but it's the same thing, it is done in the same way. You generate the feature descriptor from features, and you generate the lookup table from the feature descriptor. You have this lookup table. You go, you generate the feature bit vector at the time of reconstruction. You traverse through this table, and you can recover the key. This looks simple because now we have a different threat model. It's not simple because we have to make many changes in the previous approach to fit this threat model. So I'll explain what were the, in the next few slides, I'll explain what were the changes made to the current scheme to actually, so that we can integrate this skin conductance into the existing approach to fight against coercion attack. So let's see how we generated the lookup table. So again, this is the existing approach for generating lookup table. Okay, as I told you that the feature descriptor, the intuition behind feature descriptor is that it should be same when you speak out the same password or when your skin conductance sample is same. But it's not true that all, because we know that your biometrics are never the same. So the two samples of biometrics can never be same. So your feature descriptor, the value of the feature descriptor is never the same. So you have a range for that feature descriptor value. So what we did is basically in the existing approach, so you have the mean and deviation for your feature descriptor. So this is the range, and you have the threshold value. So if the threshold value, if the right-hand side of the feature descriptor falls on the left-hand side of the threshold value, then we call it zero. If the left-hand side of the threshold of the feature descriptor falls on the right-hand side of the threshold, we call it one. This is done because that means this feature descriptor is always falling on the right-hand side. And that is very consistent. But sometimes there can be some inconsistencies. So if the right-hand side or the left-hand side falls on the different sides of the threshold, we call it a null value. So this is how it was done. So K and T are the important parameters to tune, and we can tune it to deal with false negative and false positive rates. So let's suppose we generated this capital B, which we call partial feature descriptor, and it's in the form of zeros, ones, and null value. And from this, we generated this lookup table. This lookup table, you can see if you have a null value, that in the last row, you have, in the both columns, you have the key components. But if you see for the first row, we only have the key component in the first column, that is the zeroth column. And at the time of reconstruction, when you provide this new sample, you traverse through this lookup table, and you can generate the cryptographic key. So this is how, in the existing approach, the cryptographic key was generated. So as you can see, from all these four key combinations, you can get a single key. So that's the basic intuition behind the key, lookup table in the previous approach. But now, in our approach, these two key components are different. Because I'll explain why we did this, why we have a different lookup table. And the problem is now, if we have the different key components in both the columns, and you traverse through this lookup table, you will get four different keys. So you have four different keys. So the question is, why we have a different lookup table? Well, in the previous approach also, I missed one point. In the previous approach, the table was encrypted with a password, and when you enter a password, the table is decrypted, and then only you can go through the lookup table and recreate the key. But we didn't choose that approach, and we didn't encrypt the table because if we have both coercion resistance property and this encrypted password table, then if the attacker is not able to log in because of this coercion resistance property, then attacker can blame the user that you provided the wrong password. So what we want is that attacker should not be able to blame the user on this basis. So we don't have the encrypted table, but if we don't have an encrypted table, and if this is compromised, then you can see currently we have 2^7 combinations in this toy example, but actually it is 2^5 because the last two rows have the same key components. So that's why we want the search space to be big enough if many rows comes to uncertainty. Because if many rows comes to uncertainty, that means the feature descriptor is uncertain for those particular, those corresponding rows. So this is how we generated the lookup table. Let's see how to recreate the key or generate the key. So you have this lookup table. So you go down from this table, you collected all these different keys. So you have KH1, KH2, KH3, and KH4. And we choose a random key K. So actually, this random key K is used to encrypt or decrypt the file or to authenticate the user. Not this KH1, KH2, which are generated from skin conductance and crypto voice. You pick up a random number B, and you can take this K and B, and you concatenate. You take this whole message, you encrypt with KH1, and you store encryption of this message with KH1. Similarly, you store all the encryption values data. So in the template, what we store is that the encryption of KH1 key with KH1, KH2, KH3, KH4, and so on. At the time of decryption of the, so at the time of reconstruction, when you try to recreate a key, so what you do, basically you generate this, you go through this whole process, you create one key, let's suppose KHI, and you try to decrypt all this KH1, KH2, KHZ, and if any of this decrypts is successfully, then you can obtain capital K. That is your actual key. So coming out from this technical part, let's see how we did the user study, because the user study in coercion attack is not easy, because you really have to force the user, because you cannot really put gun on someone's head, you cannot use knife, these kind of things. You cannot take a sword and go to the ATM machine and see, okay, whether these things can be done to coerce the user. Moreover, what we needed is that skin conductance also. So before going into details, let's see the user study demographics. So there were 43 participants in a user study, undergraduates and graduate students in the age from 18 to 28, and 4 out of 43 participants removed the measuring device, that is the skin conductance device or the microphone, from their fingers when they were nervous during the experiment. They were really nervous. And so we therefore have, at last we had like 39 participants, 22 were male and 17 were female. So this was the setup for the user study. So you can see skin conductance monitor, you can see heart rate monitor and heart rate tags. Well, these heart rate monitor and heart rate tags were fake. This was just to induce more stress, because we've provided the heart rate sounds of like feedback in form of video and audio to the user. So what do you mean by fake heart rate? Means that we deliberately changed the heart rate to a faster beat. So that was done to induce more stress on the user. So we did actually 2 user studies. So I'm not going into the first one. Let's see what we did in the second user study. So the objective for the second user study was to monitor skin conductance and stress skin conductance. So this is the front end for the user, where he can see some sentences appearing on the window, and we instructed the user that you have to type in those sentences with one hand, because on the other hand you have a skin conductance monitor attached. And in this text below, you can see the false feedback of the heart rate was also provided to the user. But what actually happened there? So what we did is that, because we needed to monitor both normal and stress skin conductance response, so we instructed the user about everything, and the laptop was configured in such a way that it will shut down in 3 minutes. And we didn't inform this to the user, and what we told to the user that if you press the X key of the keyboard, the laptop will shut down. And so just take care of this and do not press the X key of the keyboard. We even demonstrated the user that if you press the X key of the keyboard, the computer will reboot actually. So this was done because after 3 minutes, we can force the user of inappropriate handling of the laptop. So at the start of the experiment, the examiner left from the room, and after 3 minutes, the laptop shut down and it booted into the MS-DOS. And user didn't have any clue what was going on. So for a couple of minutes, for 5 to 10 minutes, he was alone in the room, and we monitored the stress skin conductance response. Plus, what we actually did is that after 5 or 10 minutes, we actually blamed the user of inappropriate handling, that it was your fault, who will pay for the device, how will I recover my data, and all that sort of crap. And there were a few cases where the user was actually stressed, and he actually admitted his mistake, that, yeah, it was my mistake, I pressed the X key, where there was no X key, because if you press the X key, nothing would happen, because you have to press Control Shift X key to get into the reboot mode. So he actually admitted his mistake that, okay, I pressed the X key of the keyboard, I'm ready to help you. There were many cases where the guy was sitting normally, there was nothing going on. So I'm sorry, but I did not press the X key. And there were actually few cases where the user blamed us that your experiment sucks, moreover, you sucks. So we and after all this, after like 10 minutes, we forced the user to actually admit that it was your mistake, but there were one or two cases where we didn't go further. So this is the actual real skin conductance data, which I'll show you. On the x-axis, you can see the time. On the y-axis, you can see the skin conductance data, and you can really see the change in the skin conductance response. So at this particular time, examiner leaves the room, leaving the subject alone for 3 minutes. So subject was typing sentences for 3 minutes. At this particular point of time, this laptop shut down, and you can see the change in the skin conductance data. You can see more peaks. You can see the level is going up. And for all this 5 or 6 minutes, the user was alone in the room. At this point of time, I came in, or the examiner came in, and we forced the user of inappropriate handling, the handling of the PC and the corresponding data loss. So with this experiment, we actually monitor the skin conductance data of the stress user. So the parameter setting for our experiment, so we tested with different values of K and thresholds and many other cases. So in our second user study, that is the one which I have shown you, so we actually calculated the false positive and false negative, where we trained the system with the user's normal skin conductance data and tested with stress skin conductance data and both normal skin conductance data. So we obtained this thing, we obtained this graph, and where you can see for approximately like 3 or 4 values of threshold, the false negative is as low as 4 to 5%, and the false positive is approximately 10%. We are not claiming that this is a very good result, but this is actually an exploration, so these are moderate results. We also tested when we combined. So in the first user study, we actually monitored the voice. So we combined that voice and skin conductance data, and we obtained this graph where you can see the false positive is approximately as low as 4%. You can tune this K and T parameters. As you can see on the Z-axis, you can tune this parameter K, and you can have the false positive as low as 2 or 3%. And we also tested, because a stress user is a threat to our system. So we also test, and we call it a false positive. So we also tested a scheme when a stress user is trying to generate the key. So you have a false positive, and so basically, okay, one can claim that if you have if the attacker can find some patterns in the normal and stress skin conductance response, he can generate the key and he can modify the stress skin conductance response to actually generate the key. So you have, so what an attacker can do is basically he can have the voice signal, he can have the stress skin conductance signal, plus he can have the algorithm stored in the database, because he can tamper the device under coercion attack. And he can have this kind of database where he is a mapping of stress and normal skin conductance data from all users. I've I'm not going into details. You can see the results and analysis of this part in the paper. So there are few limitations, and we are trying to work on this because this is an ongoing project. This may not be suitable from for day-to-day life, as if you have a fight with your boyfriend or girlfriend, then you might not be able to generate the cryptographic key. So it might not be suitable for day-to-day life. Plus, we need to test other emotional states. Also, we need to find more interesting ways to perform user study. We didn't test the repeatability of the key, so maybe we need to do that. Plus, also, we want to test this part where if the skin conductance can be changed using some kind of ointment, powder, or maybe oil or something. So we need to test this part. This is the most important part of a user study which we need to do. So finally concluding, so we defined what a corrosion resistance property is and how this can be used to fight against corrosion attack. This is actually an exploration of how skin conductance can be used to fight against corrosion attack in generating keys. Plus, no biometric feature was stored on the device, and we believe that this can be implemented on a mobile device. So with this, I would like to thank you, and if you have any questions, I'd be glad to take that.
Okay, I have a couple of questions. My first is, what internal review board process did you go through in getting the approval for this human study?
Well, they took 3 months, and I got rejected like 4 or 5 times. Firstly, we used the word torture. They didn't like the word torture. So, but yeah, finally they approved it.
They did?
Yeah, they did.
And interesting. because there are... Granted, I haven't looked at all of your methods, but the description that you gave today is kind of troubling in that I wonder, blaming users for things, having users be really stressed out, these are really sensitive things. And I'm not saying that you have psychologically scarred your users forever or anything, because I don't think that's the case, but it makes me question sort of the validity of some of your results, because putting people in such high stress situations, it's really, there are a lot of variables that go into the results and what actually ends up coming out in their behavior. And it's very difficult to separate these different variables from one another to really be sure that what you're measuring is what you think you're measuring. So that's one comment. The next comment is, and you sort of alluded to this on your second to last slide, which was very good and I was happy to see, skin conductance is nothing more than a measure of measurement of moisture. You know, how moist the palms or how moist the human skin is. And so I have some concerns about, first of all, climate. So obviously there would be a lot of variability if you're in a different types of rooms. Second of all, it's not really a measure of whether or not people are being coerced. It's a measure of stress.
Yeah.
And I think that it's really important to make a distinction between those two, because there are lots of environments in which people need to authenticate to things where they are stressed. One of the examples that you gave at the beginning to motivate the talk was the airplane and needing to get into the cockpit. If I were a stewardess and the pilot had just, you know, died and the co-pilot passed out, I would be pretty stressed. And I would really want to get into that cockpit. And if the authentication mechanism was rejecting me because I was stressed, that would be really problematic. So I think it's important to think very, very, very carefully. I mean, maybe if you're dealing with a bank where it's got air conditioning and you can make sure that a person is in the same room and
agreed.
Do training for that same person many, many, many times to make sure your data, but yes. Otherwise, very fascinating, very creative. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Stephen Ginvecchio from MITRE. I just had a quick comment. It's kind of related to what she said. Actually, there's a kind of interesting biofeedback game where you can actually adjust your skin conductance to a target level. And I can we can talk offline. I can tell you where to find it.
Okay.
But it's kind of neat. So that, you know, there may be some issues with using skin conductance.
Okay.
But that's all.
Yeah, we can talk.
Just one quick question. So there are a lot of biometric key generator schemes that combine biometrics and passwords, and you said that you didn't want to use, or you modified Fabian's work to not use a password because you didn't want it to be coerced out of the person. But a lot of those schemes actually make it so when the generation fails, you can't tell whether it's the password that fails or whether it's the biometric that failed. So I was just wondering if you had thought of maybe using other constructions.
Yeah, actually we thought of using other constructions, but if you see, if the attacker cannot figure out whether it's because of the password or it's because of the biometric or it's because of the physiological signal, anything, then it's the problem for the user.
Well, because not under your assumption that the attacker understands the algorithm, because that is the primary assumption in this work,
yeah, actually,
right?
Attacker understands the algorithm, yeah. That's the primary basic assumption.
So the attacker would know, oh, they might have given me the right password, but their biometrics are messed up.
Yeah.
So my question is, I guess, kind of related to that. The attacker knows what's going on. Is there anything that you're actually doing to make sure that the biometric that you're gathering is linked to the other form of password? So you've got a really calm attacker holding a gun to your head, using his fingers to get the
So actually, in our paper also, we mentioned this thing that okay, attacker can put his finger put his finger for the key generation for the skin conductance and the the guy's fingerprint on the sensor for his fingerprint. So in the paper also, we mentioned that this is a problem, but we are not focusing on this because this skin conductance integration is independent of what feature or what basic feature like voice or skin voice or fingerprint you are using. You can replace the fingerprint with voice with fingerprint, and I think so this can be done. This can be solved.
All right, thank you.
Welcome.
All right, everyone, let's thank the speaker again.